The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The T-Biz podcast delivers tea news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that simultaneously heals and energizes the body as it soothes the mind. Making fine tea is a blend of artistry and craftsmanship. The $200 billion tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts global influence, employing millions to enhance the well-being of all. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. China discourages speculation in tea and herbal medicinals. Ceylon tea export revenue rises. And Pretty Tasty receives accolades for its collagen beauty tea. Plus, Yerba Mate's master chronicler. Professor Christine Folk is one of the world's authorities on the history of beverages. A delightful storyteller, anthropologist, and historian, she recently penned The Book of Yerba Mate, A Stimulating History, released this week by Princeton University Press. Quote, brewed from the dry leaves and tender shoots of an evergreen tree native to South America, Yerba Mate gives its drinkers the jolt of liquid effervescence many of us get from coffee or tea, end quote, Christine tells TBiz correspondent Jessica Natalie Willard, in a wide-ranging and engaging conversation about the world's third most popular naturally stimulating beverage. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Keilani Valley, Telawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia Tea Estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
In August, China's Administration for Market Regulation published a draft of anti-monopoly guidelines for the pharmaceutical sector, including teas and herbs used in Chinese traditional medicine, TCM. According to Reuters, the guidelines suggest the prospect of authorities' closer scrutiny of these markets. The Kaimai Chinese Medicinal Material Index, a measure of investment activity in tea and herbs, hit a record high in July as some leaves, roots, and bark tripled in price. The spike is attributed to speculators and prompted official warnings for speculators to stop pumping up the market and to the public, quote, not to get consumed by the fever of fast-rising prices, end quote. Reuters writes, quote, the speculative frenzy comes at a time when the economy is struggling to grow as it grapples with deflationary pressures and weak consumer demand, end quote. In the tea market, trading has been brisk in the premium pu'er variety, which experts consider to improve in quality as it ages and is traded and collected much like vintage wine. TCM Medicinals Gold Thread, White Peony Root, and Tree Peony Bark have more than tripled in price in the past 2 years, driving the Kangmai Index up by 50%. Dealers say tight supplies due to floods are partly to blame, but a bigger factor is manipulation by capital, end quote. The Bozu Traditional Chinese Medicinal Material Association, an industry group, advised members to warn speculators, quote, not to pump up prices, end quote. Chinese state broadcaster CCTV reported in January that prices of Changxi tea, a pu'er brand from the tea trading hub in Guangzhou, shot up by 50,000 won, that's $7,023 per 2.5 kilo brick, before plunging more than 80% overnight, leading to the loss of hundreds of thousands of won. Quote, investors should be on high alert and get rid of the whim to get rich overnight, end quote, according to Liwan district officials. Liwan district is home to Guangzhou's wholesale tea market. Compared to 2023, January through July export totals of Ceylon tea reveal a 5.5 million kilo increase to 140.5 million kilos. The average FOB, freight on board value, is down slightly, as is tea production at 150.5 million kilos compared to last year. The Tea Research Institute of Sri Lanka projects tea exports will generate $1.5 billion in sales in 2024. Quote, all categories showed negative variances averaging 1,772 rupees in value compared to 2023, when the average value was 1,828 rupees, according to the Sri Lanka Tea Export Association. July exports were down by 1.4 million kilos compared to July 2023. Higher volume, however, grew second quarter revenue to 110 billion rupees, about 369 million US dollars, compared to 99.7 billion rupees, about $335 million last April through June. First quarter revenue totaled 110 billion, a rupees increase of 690 million year on year compared to January through March 2023. Second quarter auction prices increased by approximately 16%, with a sale average of 1,244 rupees versus 1,070 rupees during the corresponding period in 2023. Russian buyers have returned to the market, buying 15 million kilos of tea during the first half of the year, a 6% increase that elevated Russia to number two among the major tea trading partners. Iraq remains Sri Lanka's number one trading partner, as it was in 2023, but has purchased 2% less tea this year than last. Iraq imported 17.8 million kilos through July, compared to 18.3 million kilos through July 2023. The UAE imported 14 million kilos, a substantial 50% year-on-year increase in 2024. It was followed by Turkey, which imported 10.6 million kilos, and Iran, which imported 7 million kilos. Exports to China are nearing 7 million kilos. Bulk shipments of mainly Orthodox processed black tea totaled 66,000 metric tons, or about 47% of total exports. Tea in packets accounted for 40% of the total. Tea in bags accounts for 10%. Green tea exports represent about 1.8%, and instant tea accounts for about 1.2%. Sri Lanka exports tea to 150 countries. Pretty Tasty Tea is a startup ready-to-drink brand that contains 10 grams of collagen peptides dissolved in a naturally flavored stevia-sweetened black tea base. According to co-founder Scarlett Leung, the tea is formulated with essential amino acids that support skin, nails, and hair and act as an anti-inflammatory, benefiting joints. Leung recently defeated more than 150 other emerging beverage brands in a pitch-style competition to take top honors at the New Beverage Showdown 27 during BevNet's Live Summer 24 event. The competition features two rounds of live pitching and an interactive Q&A before a panel of investors, retailers, founders, and BevNet staff. In a release, she writes, quote, this win validates our product across the beverage industry as the judges unanimously agreed on the superior taste. Both collagen and protein are two of the fastest growing supplements, showing just how much there is a need in the market for a delicious, convenient option to incorporate them in everyday routines. Pretty tasty resolves it, end quote. Though explains that collagen peptides dissolve easily in water, are non-allergenic, and are a great source of protein. Quote, our collagen is also naturally packed with 18 different amino acids. Amino acids are the building blocks essential for protein synthesis, tissue repair, and nutrient absorption. The tea sells for $47.99 for a 12-pack in cans and is available as an instant tea mix in 30 sachet packets. Each sachet makes 8 to 16 ounces of tea. Flavors include peach, raspberry, lemon, and black tea. Learn more at www.prettytasty.com. Business Insight. BevNet is an early adopter of the pitch event format to encourage beverage innovation. Quote, showcasing new products and promising founders, it focuses on the innovators and entrepreneurs designing the products of tomorrow. Throughout its 15-year history, BevNet New Beverage Showdown has served as a springboard for some of today's most popular brands at their earliest launch days. End quote. Past winners include Health Aid Kombucha. Finalists this year included Heal Tea, Casey Tea, OK Energy, Bear Maple Sparkling Ginseng Elixir, and Explorer Cold Brew. Next, Arvinda Anantharaman in Bengaluru reports on this week's India Tea News.
India Tea News for the week ending 6 September 2024. It looks like Angra's cooperative tea factories may open once again. There was a tea board meeting this week, during which plans to revive the regional cooperative tea factories in Kangra came up. Between 1964 and 1981, four cooperative factories were established here, but three shut down. Only the one in Palampur remains open, but is loss-making. But with the growing small tea grower segment, reopening and upgrading the factories could well benefit farmers. In the Hindustan Times, it carried the report, quoted Sukshim Butel, who's the president of the Kangra Valley Small Tea Planters Association, as saying reopening another factory could benefit 250 small tea growers and support the livelihood of about 6,000 people. In other news, all eyes are on the top two packages, Tata Tea and Hindustan Unilever, to see if retail prices of tea will go up. Supply of tea has been hit this year. Climate has been a significant reason. And there has been a surge in tea prices because of the decline in production. Tea production dropped by about 13% from January to July. And in July, auction prices in North India went up by 21% compared to last year. August saw a further rise in auction prices in Calcutta and Siliguri. The South also seeing price rise. Kunur and Cochin saw a price rise of 37% and 21% respectively. And this price rise is seen more in CTC than in orthodox tea and is expected to impact retail prices. Hindustan Unilever owns the brands Lipton, Taj Mahal and Brooke Bond, while Tata Consumer Products owns Tata Tea, Ketley, Kanan Devan, Agni, among others. Incidentally, share prices of several listed tea companies, including Jayashree Tea and the United Nilgiri Tea Estates, surged on Wednesday thanks to increased procurement costs. And lastly, a recent Comptroller and Auditor General report has highlighted inadequacies in implementing labor laws in Assam. The audit was on implementation of schemes for the welfare of tea tribes, period 2015-16 to 2020-21. And it assessed the implementation of the schemes across Kutch, Dibrugarh, Nagaon, and Sonitpur in Assam. There are 390 tea estates in these zones. 40 were selected for the audit based on the plantation size and worker count. And the audit included records and also interviews with 590 workers. Some of the areas the report highlights are insufficient intervention by the state in aligning wages with the Minimum Wage Act, inadequate efforts to improve worker conditions, wage disparities between Barak Valley and Brahmaputra Valley, implementation of welfare schemes, and lack of reports and data as mandated.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hello, I'm Bogdan, a passionate tea drinker and the inventor of the ultimate tea machine, the Brewmaker One. Preparation is key to making fine tea. Sequential steepings deliver the best taste possible and unlock the true value of whole leaf teas and botanicals. Brew automates that process without using any pots or capsules. This simple-to-operate smartphone-controlled device stores steeping profiles to consistently make great tea at the push of a button. Brew also reduces time, waste, and energy. That's because I engineered the brew to remember control settings for temperature, brewing time, and quantity. Using my patented process lets you stack steeps simply and conveniently.
Professor Christine Folk is one of the world's authorities on the history of beverages, a delightful storyteller, anthropologist, and historian. She recently penned The Book of Yerba Mate, a stimulating history, released this week by Princeton University Press. Quote, brewed from the dry leaves and tender shoots of an evergreen tree native to South America, Yerba Mate gives its drinkers the jolt of liquid effervescence many of us get from coffee or tea, end quote, Christine tells TBiz correspondent Jessica Natalie Willard. In a wide-ranging and engaging conversation about the world's third most popular naturally stimulating beverage.
Hello, everyone. It's Jessica Natalie Willard from Victoria, British Columbia, Canada. It's been a while since I've been on the podcast, and I am so glad to be back with you. I'm really excited about our next guest, too. You may remember her from a previous TBiz podcast episode back in 2022. Our guest is Christine Folch, and she is an associate professor of cultural anthropology at Duke University in North Carolina. Last time she was on the show with me, we had a great conversation about three tea-like beverages of the Ilex or Holly genus. Those three drinks are called Yopan, Wayusa, and Yerba Mate. I have to be honest that interview with Christine was one of my favorites that I've done on the TBiz podcast. I loved it because of the history and the cultural components that we talked about, and I find myself referring to it quite a lot in conversation when people are asking about tea. I often say, did you know there are other tea-like beverages that are from this side of the world, North and South America? If you want to listen again to that episode or maybe hear it for the first time, you can go to the TBiz website, tea-biz.com, and search Elix, I-L-E-X. That should bring up the article and the original segment. So I mentioned that what I loved about that conversation was the history of the beverages. I also liked hearing her argument about why two of those three beverages, Yopan and Wayusa, never managed to compete on the world stage with coffee and tea during those first few centuries of colonial America. Yerba mate was different. It is the most well-known of the three Elix beverages, and as you're going to hear from Christine soon, it did become widely popular, just not everywhere, and it did not reach where I am in Canada, for example. But Yerba Mate is what we're here to talk with Christine about today. She has a brand new book coming out, The Book of Yerba Mate, A Stimulating History. I do love that subtitle. Stimulating, because of course it's a caffeinated beverage. The book will be published by Princeton University Press and released on September 10th. I did have a look on Amazon and you can pre-order it if you're as keen to read it as I am. As tea lovers, you are likely familiar with yerba mate. In the last decade or so, I would say I've seen it appear on canned drinks on grocery store shelves. I think they're usually with organic or caffeinated or energy beverages. If you've ever tried it, though, you know that it's typically enjoyed in a gourd or a mug, the traditional way, that is. And you sip it through what is called a bombilla, which is a straw that has a strainer on the bottom. So the leaves are loose in the receptacle, the gourd or the mug. In looking through Christine's book, I was fortunate to get a sneak peek of the book. I was surprised to learn that yerba mate is still considered the world's third most popular naturally stimulating beverage. It is very good at delivering that jolt of caffeine in the morning that many of us need to kickstart our day, I think. So now, the mate's in the gourd, the leaves have been steeped. It's time to welcome Christine. Welcome, Christine Fulch from Duke University, here to chat with us about her forthcoming book on yerba mate.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so excited to have you back, and I want to congratulate you on the upcoming book. That's really exciting, and I feel lucky that we're getting a sneak peek into it.
I'm really glad to talk about this, so thank you for having me.
So we chatted back in 2022, and in that conversation, we discussed your research into all three Ilex beverages, yopan, guayusa, and yerba mate. What led you to focus on mate in this work? And can readers expect, you know, yopan and guayusa to get an honorable mention or maybe a sequel?
So yopan and guayusa absolutely show up in the book. They show up early in the story and then they show up at the end. But what I loved about making this book, about doing this research, is that this book is a passion project. It comes out of the love that I have for Latin American cuisine and how important I think food is to telling both really personal, intimate stories and then global stories of trade and empire and colonialism and science and capitalism, all of these big, big words. I think food does both of these moves. I started researching yerba mate decades ago, and yerba mate took me to yopan and guayusa. And so I think it's really hard to tell the story of yerba mate without them. I think one of the things that's lovely is how stories about the things that we consume surprise us.
Fabulous. And a passion project. So when did the seed get planted for this book?
So there are multiple seeds that have been planted for this book. If you had talked to me maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I would have told you that this book started as a response to the beverage yerba mate and my surprise about yerba mate. So I was in like the early 2000s living in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and a friend of mine came back from a trip from South America. She was in Chile, and she brought back the iconic gourd, the drinking straw bombilla, and a package of dried mate, like a kilo. And I was so intrigued by this thing that I didn't know anything about because it's from the southern part of South America, and my family's from the Caribbean, and so I thought we had nothing to do with it. And so that piqued my interest. A few years later, I was in Lebanon traveling and saw people drinking it in the same way there. And by that point, my interest was hooked. I got to know people from Argentina who were drinking it. And so I thought that this was the story of my interest, that it was me kind of getting to know communities across the world that were consuming this beverage. And I thought that was how the book started, and how the research started. How does this beverage go from one place to another place? And why don't we drink it more commonly here in North America? That's how I thought the story started. And then as I was researching it, I realized I have, you know, yerba mate took me home. My experience of yerba mate in my 20s was not my first experience with it. Cuban Americans have been making a yerba mate soda since before they were Cuban Americans, since they were in Cuba. In the 1920s, a company in Cuba started making a carbonated beverage called materva, with, you know, yerba mate and like tons of sugar. It's very sweet. And this beverage followed Cubans in exile to Miami. And so my mom is from Cuba. And so my grandfather used to drink this stuff with us. I know children shouldn't drink caffeine. Okay. But, or lots of sugar, but, you know, grandparents are indulgent. And so we used to drink it with him when we were a kid. And so this is how the story actually starts without me even realizing it.
And so at first, when you tried yerba mate for the first time, that was, you know, a personal experience. At what point did it become a professional or academic pursuit?
I think pretty quickly after I moved to New York to start graduate studies. While I was doing my PhD in cultural anthropology, I found myself gravitating to some themes that I'm regularly interested in. And one of the themes that I'm regularly interested in is cuisine and food and how you can read culture in recipes and how recipes hold art in everyday life. But how recipes also are these stories about very large global processes, like I said, like capitalism, like colonialism. And so I was reading other people writing about other foodstuffs, and I was like, well, what about yerba mate? Why aren't people writing an analysis of how this drink gets from South America to parts of the Middle East, but it's not commonly consumed in North America? Why is that? And so my interest was piqued because the history of mate is the history of the last 500 years in the Americas. And it's a history of the transformation of countries, of the rise and fall of empires, European empires. It's the story of cultural contact and violence. It's the story of immigrants and migrants going and searching for a better life and adopting new practices. This is what the Syrians, the Lebanese did when they came to South America and, you know, into Argentina and Uruguay and Brazil and Paraguay in the late 19th century, early 20th century. I mean, they went all over South America, but specifically in the mate drinking places. Picked up a habit in the early 20th century and returned back to the Levant, carrying with them mate.
Thank you. For our listeners, a reminder that Christine is an assistant professor of cultural anthropology at Duke University. And so this book, you can be sure, is very well researched and has tons of amazing information and bringing archival and historical artifacts to life through this work. I love that you're talking about all the ways that mate has touched history, because in a way that is what drew me to be interested in tea at the beginning too. The story of tea and its travels through the world and then how it becomes related to culture and business and horticulture. And I find that fascinating. In the notes that I was looking at about the book, you also mentioned that yerba mate inspired the world's first written tango. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So one of the things that's really fun about food is that, as we all know, it's never only just about food. And so mate is such an iconic beverage for South America that it helps us think about other parts of popular culture. So the tango, it's a dance and a musical form that is an amalgamation, right? It uses Afro-Uruguayan, Afro-Argentine beats and rhythms, and then gets layered on with more kind of European harmonics. And so, you know, tonal forms, this musical form that arises in the cities of Montevideo and Buenos Aires in the Rio de la Plata, so the River Plate, in these port contexts of contact, you get this musical form and the first written tango. So the lyrics that we've got for it are che, toma mate, which means like, you know, drink mate. hey, you drink mate. But it's also kind of an expression that means, it colloquially means like, you know, so this is the way life is, right? And it's written by a Spaniard who is an immigrant to Argentina. So what this means is the song itself is, you know, it's such an iconic beverage that an immigrant who at that point would have been coming from a culture that drank coffee came down and wrote a song about a different beverage as his way of connecting to where he was. And so I just love that there's so, you know, there are these things that we consume that become not just, you know, a morning pick-me-up, but become part of the fabric of how we narrate our lives. That's what mate does for South America and also for certain parts of the Middle East. The mate itself, the gourd and the bombilla drinking straw come to stand in for a whole culture.
Wow. And what is that trajectory of mate from South America to the Middle East?
The largest market for yerba mate outside of this, outside of what we call the Southern Cone. So the Southern Cone would be like the bottom part of South America. So it'd be like Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, the southern part of Brazil, Chile as well. The largest market is Syria. So Syrians picked up a yerba mate habit in the late 19th, early 20th century when we had waves of people coming from the Levant, Syrians and Lebanese. And you had waves of migrants coming in the late 19th century. The Levantine, Syrian, Lebanese migrants pick up mate as something to drink and something to consume. And like it so much that when they go back home to visit relatives or to marry or to live as their elderly, they take it back with them and it becomes a really important beverage in Syria and Lebanon today.
Fascinating. Thank you. In our talk a few years ago, we discussed how one of the other Elix beverages, Yopan, had a marketing problem, or let's call it a racism problem. It was being consumed by the people that American colonizers perceived to be the wrong people. They were indigenous people. Now, did your research for this book uncover more information about why yerba mate failed to be commodified like tea and coffee?
Well, so yerba mate was commodified like tea and coffee, right? So that's part of the story. Yeah, like it's a major global beverage. It's not consumed here, but it is a major commodity in South America. And so I think one of the questions is, so thank you for asking this. So one of the questions is like, you know, how it is that certain like coffee and tea and then mate kind of get the footprint of fanatics that they do. One of the things I think is really interesting about this is, so when Europeans came into contact with yerba mate, they didn't have a caffeine habit.
Right.
And they didn't have a caffeine preference. So yerba mate has like basically 100-year start. Head start from coffee and tea. But it doesn't make it in, it doesn't make it. And so then the question becomes, well, why? Well, this is because of the economic philosophy of the time. So this is one of my arguments, right? This is not like somebody else wrote this. I'm telling you what my interpretation of this is. So yeah. Yerba mate becomes a commodity that is incredibly important and circulates all across the Spanish Empire. So it grows in a very particular part of the world. And instead, it becomes like the drink of all over South America and makes it up to Mexico and it makes it to Spain. But the Spanish don't think, you know what I want to do? I want to get the French addicted to this too. You know what I want to do? I want to get the British addicted to this. Then we'll make bank. That's not the economic philosophy at the time. The economic philosophy of the time is mercantile capitalism, mercantilism, which has this idea that what we do is we don't do trade outside of our empire. So while it was this really important commodity inside the Spanish Empire, and remember, the Spanish Empire existed for over many more years than the British Empire, right? The Spanish Empire was the sort of first global European empire, and the last one. So it's huge. It's huge in terms of time. And then in terms of space, right? It includes like places like the Philippines. It touches on Japan, right? And then if we include Iberian Empire, so not just Spanish, then we're also bringing in like, you know, the Portuguese are in India, not just in, and obviously in Africa, not just in South America. So we've got the possibility of getting this whole like Iberian world kind of involved in this trade. And they're just not looking for French or for British consumers. And so that is, I think, why coffee and tea got the place that they did, because coffee and tea came, you know, through other kinds of marketing moves.
That is fascinating. Thank you. I have a background in communications and marketing, so I'm very fascinated by your research. And that's one of the reasons I was so looking forward to this conversation. But that is so interesting that they didn't want to look outside of the Spanish and Iberian Empire. So that's one of the reasons it didn't perhaps get further up north in North America or in other parts of the world. Thank you. I'm going to switch directions a little bit and ask about the ideal audience for the book of Yerba Mate. I think all of our listeners and it can see how well researched this is and how much you've looked into this. And so who is the audience for this book?
So the audience for this book is somebody who's smart and curious and not an academic and not a scholar. So the audience for this book is people who read cookbooks because they, not because they're going to cook everything in it, but because they're so curious about the world and so curious about food and imagining and thinking about food as a way that they travel and get to know the world. It's for the person who looks around and thinks, the world that I live in is really interesting and I want to know more about it. It's an academic book in the sense that it's researched, et cetera. And it's, you know, my job is that I'm a scholar, but I really tried to tell a story that smart, curious people of, you know, who are like, you know, who I'm imagining are beyond college age and want to pick something up and kind of get to know this thing that they're kind of starting to see everywhere. My dream would be to be able to walk into like, you know, a cafe and have it be like one of the books that are sold at cafes about the things that you consume in a cafe. That would be the dream.
I do love the way you're describing this about people who are interested in food and the stories they tell about our history of the world and different cultures. I think that's a great approach. And from what I gather, the ideal reader may or may not be the same as the modern drinker of mate. So who is drinking mate these days and how are they drinking it?
Yeah, so I mean, I hope that mate drinkers read it. I imagine that mate drinkers will, you know, I open with the recipe or the quote unquote right way to prepare yerba mate. And I'm sure people are going to be like, that's not how you do it. What you should do is you should make sure that the water is at X temperature, et cetera, et cetera. But I also really hope that this is for people who are like, you know, who maybe have a coffee machine at home and care about their coffee, but also want to know like about this other thing that they see and they want to know kind of the story of it, or people who have traveled to South America and seen mate and are curious, their interest is piqued. So I'm hoping those people are moved to purchase. And I think that, you know, the question that you're asking about how people are consuming it today is that, you know, yerba mate is, like I said, it's old, right? So it's pre-colonial. It's been in use by indigenous communities since time immemorial. It has now moved beyond these more traditional communities in a different form. And that different form is as a ready-to-drink, canned or bottled beverage.
Yes, I have seen that quite a lot in stores these days.
So I know that you're seeing this kind of everywhere. That what these companies realized is that people are not going to take up the gourd and the straw and sort of the large ritualistic ceremony around it. That's a steep learning curve, unless you're really highly motivated. But people in North America, boy, do we love, you know, opening cans of oats or unscrewing bottle tops. Like, we are super down with something like that. And so if you put it in a new form, you can get to a new public. So there's been this uptake of people who are super interested in, you know, trying new kinds of stimulating beverages.
And I do recall that the Argentine national football team has shared drink mate.
Yeah. This is their special sauce that helps them win. And it's part of them underscoring to themselves and to their fans who they are. It's also super yummy.
I had a friend recently come and stay with me, and as a gift, I was sent some mate.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's such a delight. So this friend will be receiving your book as a thank you for the gift that he sent me.
Oh, that's wonderful.
For the last question, I'd like you to think about your future reader. So let's pretend it's 6 months after they finish the book and mate comes up in a conversation with friends. What do you hope that they say?
Whatever they say next kind of takes the story further in the conversation. Actually, did you know that it's not just yerba mate, but we actually have a beverage that's kind of like it here in the United States? No. Yes. And it grows all over the U.S. South. And actually, people are selling it again. But it was so popular that John Locke, yes, John Locke, do you remember? Remember we studied him in high school? Yes. Wanted to import it. I was just taking a trip to Lebanon and I saw it everywhere. And, you know, this is kind of the thing I would like people to say. They would make connections between the conversation they're having and mate.
I'd say it's already working in the case of my friend who was telling me about how much he likes mate. I described Yopan and explained what I had learned from you. So I'm excited to hear about further connections that are made as the book gets released in September.
Thank you.
Any final words for our listeners?
You know, bottoms up. It's really, I can't wait to hear what people think about it. I do want to say this. I don't think there is one right way to drink it. So there are different kinds of products and different kinds of flavors. And some people want it really bitter and some people want it really sweet. And I don't think there's one right way. I think we can incorporate these recipes in our lives and give them our own meanings. And that is really special.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being back on the show, Christine. I meant it when I said that I was really excited to speak with you and hear about the book.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of TBiz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the TBiz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.